Sometimes the future isn't just written. Sometimes it's rewritten. And sometimes it fights back. You're listening to the Curvature Chronicles.
Previously on the Curvature Key, all doors lead forward, even the ones that are closed. Sarah steps into the hidden attic above Boomer's, unlocking a Zarathian gate to report on Castor and the artifact now rewriting him from the inside out. But orders from Zora have changed. The Kren assassin must be destroyed, and Castor may not be safe either. Meanwhile, Castor and Sarah's bond deepens as the artifact pulls them into a strange resonance space of sand and blood-orange skies, where nothing is fake and everything is magnified. But someone else is closing in. Freshek waits, blade in hand. This is episode 5 of The Curvature Key.
Sarah climbed the narrow stairs behind the staff refrigerator, ducking under exposed beams. The air up here smells of beer, dust, and ozone. The attic is dark, as always. She heads toward the sigil-etched arch at its center. The Zarathian gate is different from the other three that come together in the attic. Her gate was clean, organized, very station-like. It sat about 2 feet away on one side of a square. Each side of the square looked a little different. There was a large, ornate boxer's lock that secured the gates when they weren't in use. Sarah touched her ring to the sigil to open it. This was called a created gate. Created gates had formed when the Zarathians' first foray into the Milky Way galaxy had met with disaster. That at the hands of their own kind with a far different ideology. The Oblivion Covenant was a formidable group of zealots. They believed there was only one way to save the entire universe from the Kren Empire. That was to destroy the advanced Zarathian technology, and then the Zarathians themselves. So the Kren would never have access to the triple helix Zarathian DNA. A key component of the helix crystals that were used to power almost all Zarathian tech. The arch opened silently. At first, showing a corridor of liquid light leading to a distant star, haloed city on Zora. Not the quickest connection, but it took a moment today to make sure something going millions of light years was secure. A form resolves on the other end, translucent at first, angular. Triel Van.
Report.
No wasting time here.
I've confirmed it. The artifact did not make a random jump. If the Kren is the one who stole it, then I think it only selected him as a means of escape. It never intended to remain with him. Sinking with the human Castor Ames proves that, in my mind.
The image scratched its chin.
How did you arrive at that conclusion? In your mind, Agent Sudis?
Because the artifact is changing Castor. Somehow. Making it easier for the artifact to communicate with him. It's slower than I remember Sinking explained in the textbooks, but it's adapting to him.
Or adapting him to it. And the Kren status?
He's still alive. I've had no further contact with him. His tether to the artifact still holds.
A long silence followed.
Authorization for you, Agent Sudis, has changed. The artifact's behavior violates all the risk containment profiles that we have. The longer it has a tether to multiple entities, the more unstable and erratic it's likely to become. You are hereby authorized to take action against and destroy, if necessary, the Kren assassin.
And the human?
She asks without changing expression. Triel tilts her head ever so slightly. An evil grin starts to form.
What about the human, Agent Sudis? Observe. For now. Find out what you can about him. But the artifact may be using him as a template. If he destabilizes or becomes a problem for you, eliminate him as well.
Sarah nodded and killed the portal connection with a flick of her wrist. The attic darkens and returns to stillness again. The muffled sounds of a jazz trio filter into her ears as she reaches the bottom of the attic stairs. She looks at the sigil-carved arch and mutters,
"You're not going to make this easy, are you, Castor?"
Sarah met up with Castor at Boomer's, their usual public spot. He had beaten her there this time. She walked in with her long purple hair pulled back to the left in a braid. Castor watches her like it's the first time he's seen her, staring intently, like he's trying to see past the shape she's chosen. She sits down across the table from him. She can hear the book in his backpack humming like it's satisfied. Or smug.
"You jumped again,"
she said, as a matter of fact. Castor nodded.
It was into the future this time.
He was still looking at her intensely. She didn't respond to his statement immediately. But Castor thought he saw something flicker behind her eyes.
"That's impossible. You can't portal into the future. The artifact is showing visions of what might happen. Like me spilling coffee on you. You had to wait until it actually happened."
"I saw you, Sarah, hurt, dying. And me, older. I looked like I belonged there. The older me said something like, 'You still have time.'"
She glanced rapidly around Boomer's. No one was close. She leaned in slightly.
"Then it's happening even faster than I thought."
"You know, I hate it when you say things like that with no referential context, but okay, I'll play. What's happening faster than you thought?"
Her fingers tap out an unconscious Zarathian sync check rhythm on her ceramic cup. But she doesn't answer him right away. She squints as she studies him.
"You're different, Castor. Since this last jump, you feel different."
"I won't argue about that. It's like, I don't know if I'm feeling things because of me or because of the book. My thoughts echo in my head all the time, especially when I think about you."
Sarah froze in mid-slurp. He blushes as the words start to tumble out.
I mean, not in a creepy way. I care about you and what happens to you. I know that. I am drawn to you. But I'm not sure if I would be without the book. Or if now it's because of the book. Does that make sense?"
"Yes, it does, Castor."
She tossed down the remainder of her coffee and stood up to go get another cup.
"I'm fond of you, too."
Castor raised an eyebrow.
"I can tell. You sound enthralled."
"Castor, what I am is scared."
She returns with her coffee and sits back, folding her arms, her voice quieter now.
"Our war. Zarathians versus Kren. It's not like human wars. It spans systems and centuries. It spans philosophies. It carries across biology itself."
"Biology, Sarah? He looks rough, but not that far biologically from us."
"Well, the Kren grow through forced adaptation. They mingle alien DNA with their own to survive and grow. We, on the other hand, we refine ourselves through intent, focus, energy. Shifting our forms around isn't something most of us can do on a whim. It takes a lot of preparation and focus."
Sarah reached out and took Castor's hand across the table.
"It isn't a trick. It's a controlled form of evolution. It's a decision we make."
"Okay, I can understand that. Sort of, anyway. Where does the book come into play with all that? With me?"
"It's a gateway. A system's response to genetic intention. A design within the artifact itself. Until the Kren stole it. Opened it. Opened it wrong. He didn't have the control he thought he had of it. Then it jumped to me, to protect itself."
"Then it came to me."
"No, actually, now. I believe you were the destination. I knew about its arrival since I can recognize Triple Helix tech being active internally."
"Wait a second. You're saying I didn't just find the book in the antique store by accident? You're saying I was looking for me? It wanted to find me from half a universe away?"
Sarah shook her head.
Well, no. Andromeda is way closer than half a universe away. But we've already established that you don't physics well. Getting back to it searching for you. I didn't believe it at first, either. I thought it tethered to you to get away from the Kren, using you as a rebound point, if you will.
She leaned in closer, and this time no hesitation or calculation in her voice, just raw honesty.
But then, you opened it. Not only did you survive that, but you interacted with it, and you didn't force it open. Biologically, that should have been impossible. It is a bit like a wild creature. The artifact will defend itself. It's very powerful. That's why it's been kept out of circulation for a long time, due to the risk involved in its use. It feeds on chaos. But with you...
She trailed off. Castor swallowed. Earlier you said you were scared. Scared of what, Sarah? Sarah looked down.
Of what I might be ordered to do.
He doesn't ask what that might be. He doesn't need to. After a long silence, Castor says,
Somehow, if it comes to that, I think the book would protect me.
Sarah continued looking down at the ground. She didn't disagree with him. She didn't confirm it either. Vrashek crouched low, hidden by a dumpster and a rusted fire escape across the street. He hid and watched, his breath faintly misted in the warm air. He cinched the collar of his stolen coat tighter, as if that alone could shield him from this awful climate. The air bit through his flesh and bone like a living thing. This planet was wrong, too cold and too slow. It made his skin ache and his thoughts run like syrup. But the artifact was inside that cafe, sitting between the human and the Zorathian girl. The shifter, the one that had almost broken his ribs in their last encounter. He idly rubbed that spot. He wouldn't underestimate her again, especially now that he knew who she was. No, he'd wait. Wait until the male was alone. Then he would act. The door, the link, the portal would finally be his again. His left hand drifted slowly inside his coat. It clutched the obsidian blade tucked within it. Vrashek whispering in a guttural mix of Kren despite the translator implant. He smacked his head with his free hand. Of course, he should have realized. His translator hadn't activated before their fight because she was speaking Zorathian. He stood and smoothed out his coat.
Soon.
Boomers seemed to shimmer. Castor and Sarah were mid-sentence, talking about emotion, bonding, and the Zorathian-Kren war when it happened. The book in Castor's backpack pulsed like a bell being struck. No wind, no noise, just a flash. Just a hard reset of everything. Boomer's coffee was gone. Cast and Sarah now stood on a white sand beach under a blood-orange sky. The sun was entirely too large, sagging so low it looked ready to sink into the ocean itself. The sand was warm on his suddenly bare feet. He reached down and scooped some up. It shimmered faintly between his fingers.
Where are we?
Sarah was scanning the horizon, but she looked relaxed. The tension that usually knotted her shoulders was gone. Castor admired those shoulders, freed from the usual sweatshirt by the tank top she now wore.
He was beginning to like it here.
This isn't a real place, Castor. It's not a memory.
She breathed softly as she leaned over and patted the sand.
Not a projection either. It's a resonance space. The book created it from us.
She stood and wiped the sand from her hands. She looked down at her tank top and cut-off shorts.
Well, it probably created it from you more than me.
Castor's blush was redder than the too low sun.
You mean this is how I see you?
There was a small, amused tilt to her mouth as she answered.
It's at least partly how you see us. But who are you, Castor Ames? I mean, you know quite a bit about me, like I'm not from around here. But all I know is that you're an anthropology graduate student who doesn't indulge your planet's greatest contribution to the universe.
Castor blinked in thought. Coffee? She smiled. They sat on the beach, silently watching the sun star sink further into the ocean. Then Castor said quietly,
There isn't much to tell. I was orphaned as a child. Still don't know if my parents are gone or just left me. No complaints about my adoptive parents, though. Both teachers. God, I used to hate homework. They'd explain just enough so I could figure things out if I really tried.
He hugged his knees and rocked back and forth slightly.
And I never really felt like I fit in anywhere. That's why I gravitated toward history and anthropology, I think. Hoping the past could help me figure out who I'm supposed to be in the world.
Sarah watched him with an unreadable look. A flicker of recognition or maybe sorrow in her eyes. It passed quickly, but Castor caught a trace.
I wanted to ask you earlier, is this real? How can I know that what I'm feeling isn't the book using me as a puppet?
Sarah reached out and brushed the edge of a flower blooming in the sand. Something alien and crystalline that chimed when she touched it.
The artifact. The book. Can't make something out of nothing. From what I've studied, it can only amplify what it finds. Mirror it, push it, turn it up, louder.
She smiled that mischievous, tilted grin again.
If you felt nothing for me, you wouldn't be asking that question.
So this, my feelings through all this, are real.
Yes, Castor. Our feelings. They're all magnified, but they are real.
They stared at each other long enough that something quiet passed between them, unspoken but understood. Castor put his hand over hers. She didn't pull away. He leaned in and kissed Sarah. A long, slow kiss. Pure fireworks. Until the sky shifted, Sarah leaned away and looked up sharply.
We're being pulled back.
Now? No! Why? Why are we being pulled back now?
I don't know, Castor, but something tells me it's not the book this time.
They vanished from the resonance beach like mist. When the light faded, Castor blinked, finding himself back in Boomer's coffee. The low hum of the espresso machine filled the air again. Sarah was sitting across from him, that tilted grin still plastered on her. He looked down and opened his hand. Resting in his palm was a single crystalline petal, cool and faintly glowing. Sarah's eyes widened.
You brought something back.
No, Sarah. We brought something back.
The Four Corners bar was empty by the time Sarah got to it. A few locals, trying to prolong last call as long as possible, nursed drinks in the front. Laughter drifted up from the pool table in the back. The jukebox was cycling through a soft jazz playlist that no one had chosen. Sarah slipped behind the staff-only door near the storage room without notice. She moved with ease past the old wine crates and Christmas lights that no one ever put away. The dusty old foosball table hadn't been touched in what looked like a decade. She dropped her arm with the sigils on it into the spot on the console and waited. The blank white fog solidified and stretched before her. It resolved into the cool, almost featureless face of her handler, primary observer Riss Mech. She didn't smile.
Saarinen, you are 32 hours late with your report.
Sarah frowned.
Primary observer Riss Mech. I did report. It was to Command Overseer Triel Van.
The figure crossed its arms.
Yes, she communicated the status of what is going on. Saarinen, you do not report to Command Overseer Triel Van. You report to Primary Observer Riss Mech.
My apologies, Primary Observer Rismak. It is my error and will not happen again.
Sarah blinked rapidly and lowered her head slightly. The other figure's image seemed to relax just a little.
What of the human male?
Castor Ames. We were just in a resonance space together. It was emotional in origin. I'm no expert, but it was likely a response to elevated neurochemical cross-activation.
You are correct, Saranin.
Sarah smiled at the praise, but was immediately deflated when Rismek continued.
You are no expert. So he has begun sinking?
Yes, Primary Observer.
The image flinched almost imperceptibly. In Zorathian culture, addressing someone by their title without their name after it was rare. It was the strongest allowance of anger with a superior that was allowed.
Saranin, forgive my directness. It is a very stressful time.
Sarah nodded in agreement and the tension eased.
He is developing emotional attachments, possibly romantic. I am unsure if they're part of the bond he's forging with the artifact, or an independent path of connection.
She could have kicked herself after that giggle. Rismek immediately picked up on it.
Saranin, does this compromise your objectivity?
She opened her mouth, then clamped it shut. Finally, she said,
Not yet.
Please define for me the term, not yet.
Sarah straightened up and jutted her chin out a little, mainly to hide her rising blush.
I'm reporting as ordered, and will do as ordered. The artifact is adapting to him faster than any of the projections. It's evolving. It chose him.
The image seemed to consider the many sides of that response before going on.
I see. And regarding the Kren agent you reported?
After the confrontation in the alley, I've lost him. He was shadowing us due to the artifact. But now no sensors have registered him in over 11 hours local time.
Rismek's expression sharpened. It was almost like ice falling off a stone.
That is unacceptable.
Yes, Primary Observer Rismek. I know. What should I do with Castor Ames?
A long pause followed.
You mean the human, Saranin? Observe, for now. Only terminate him if the Kren reclaims the artifact, or is using the human to operate it, or the resonance space spreads externally. Until then, the human is a viable asset.
Sarah nodded her head but clenched her jaw. She had another question that remained unspoken. What if I can't let Castor go? She didn't ask it. And Rismek didn't need to answer it. The portal pulsed and dimmed, the connection broken. Sarah sat staring into the white void for another moment or two before rising. She rose and headed back down the stairs.
The lines between duty and desire are blurring. Sarah's orders are clear, but her heart isn't. Castor's connection to the artifact deepens, reshaping him into something neither Zorathian nor human. And somewhere in the shadows, Vershek is still hunting. What happens when the artifact stops adapting and starts deciding? If you're enjoying Curvature Chronicles, be sure to follow, rate, and subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts. It helps others find the signal. Until next time, keep your eyes on the curve, because every story bends reality.